We're back with Managing Director of the ISF, Steve Durbin, for another conversation of critical importance. Today, we are here to talk about who is the real insider threat to your business. As well as dealing with external threats, organizations are increasingly finding themselves under attack by insider threats. In fact, insider threat accounts for 54% of all breaches, the majority. That's amazing. The insider threat can be found at any level across the business, from top to bottom. For example, high-profile cases such as the Hillary Clinton email scandal, or Edward Snowden leaking top-secret information, to the ongoing daily threat of increasing phishing scams. Steve, what are the three most common types of insider threats to be found within an organization?
Yeah, good question, Tavia. I mean, we at the ISF segmented into three blocks. So we talk about malicious insiders, we talk about accidental insiders, and we talk about negligent insiders. Those are the three primary areas. And the good news, or perhaps the not so good news, is that the malicious insider is in the minority. So when you talk about, you know, 54%, that encapsulates all three of those areas. A lot of it is fitting into that accidental and negligent space. But what is the difference between them? Well, a malicious insider is somebody who really is going all out to harm. So it may be an activist of some shape or form. It may be a disgruntled employee, but it's somebody who's making a very conscious, determined effort to do something untoward that will affect the business. The accidental insider is really somebody who, and I think we've all fitted into this category at some stage in our careers, who's doing something by mistake. So I receive an email that I'm going to forward on to you, for instance, and I don't check the email address before I send it, and it goes to a different Tavia. So that's just pure accident. I didn't intend to do it, but it happens. That can have very serious implications, of course, depending on the data that's been attached in that email. So we should never play down the importance of some of these things. Then the third area is the negligent insider. Negligent insiders probably are acting with the best of intentions. So an example would be, for instance, that I have a very large presentation that I'm happen to be needing to send to a conference organizer. And for whatever reason, it won't go through on their email. The file is simply too big. And they come back to me and say, well, not a problem, Steve. Why don't you just put it in Dropbox? Well, from an ISF perspective, of course, we have a company policy that we don't use Dropbox. But I think, well, what's the harm in it? Doesn't really contain much information that's going to be damaging. It's going to be in the public domain anyway, because it's I'm going to be talking about it at a conference. And so I put it up in there into Dropbox. That's a negligent insider. So I'm aware of the fact that we have a policy. I'm aware of the fact that I'm breaking the policy, but I'm doing it for the best of reasons. And again, I'm not thinking about some of the implications of that, about opening up this route into the ISF corporate world by putting something up into Dropbox and making that link. So those are the three different categories. What now can you actually do about each of those? Well, I think that herein lies one of the challenges, because identifying these different individuals and the way in which they're operating at any different stage in the course of a working day, or indeed outside of that, is extremely complicated. So I think that a number of different organizations have taken an approach that says we want to be very much more cognizant of who is accessing information. So we have seen a rise, for instance, in terms of identity and access management systems, particularly at a federated level, so that we can control, you know, who is accessing what, and so we can keep an eye on those sorts of things. Other organizations have come at it from the perspective that says, well, we need to raise the level of awareness, because malicious insiders is probably not a lot we can do. If somebody is hell-bent on releasing information or stealing information or doing whatever they want to do, then probably little we can do about that until after the fact. So let's focus on the accidental and the negligent, and let's try to raise the level of awareness so that people do things like stop before they click. You mentioned phishing, for instance. We've seen an increase in phishing scams, certainly over the past 12 months. How do we train people to be more skeptical? Mobile technology doesn't help in this particular space. We're all looking and checking things on the go. We see something that in a subject header that appears to be coming from somebody that we trust, we open it, and before we know it, we're in trouble. So it is about, I think, engendering this this feeling within people that they need to just stop and think before you click. I think that's really what a lot of organizations are trying to get across. But the challenge is that this isn't the kind of thing that's ever going to go away. And so I think that, you know, for a lot of organizations, what they are trying to do is to understand better how people relate to their technology, that whole human interface piece with technology. What is it that persuades us that actually when we go online, we're in a trusted environment, whereas in actual fact, we're not. We've stepped outside a trusted environment and we've really taken a step back into the Wild West. What is it that we can do to help people work better, smarter, more effectively, safer? And some of the ones that I personally prefer are those that focus on life outside of the corporate environment. It's about how you can help people to be safer at home. Because if you can do that, you really are relating to people as people.
What about the external threat? How are cyber criminals targeting insiders? You've started to talk about that, but tell me a little bit more and tell me about what level of success that external threat is having.
Well, what we've seen is cybercrime certainly reaching a level of maturity that I think probably few people had expected as quickly. I mean, I've always talked about cybercriminals as being entrepreneurial businesses. They are entrepreneurial still, but they have reached a level of sophistication, of maturity, I think, that allows them to operate as well-oiled corporations. They collaborate very, very effectively and very efficiently. They specialize. They provide levels of service in terms of crime as a service, the way you can buy, you know, certain elements that will enable you to adversely impact a competitor or hack in a way that perhaps you wouldn't have been able to do under your own steam. So it's becoming a much more mature space. From a revenue standpoint, certainly it is outgrowing drugs worldwide. So it's a major issue. There are a lot of different areas as well where cyber criminals are able to extract information from which they can add or make significant gain. Personal information is one element of that. Medical information is an area that is being particularly targeted at the moment that has immense value. For me anyway, medical information is probably the last bastion of privacy. We're probably as individuals quite happy to have, and I'm using happy in inverted commas, mm-hmm. quite happy to have some of our information stolen or used. But medical information, that still holds a very special part, I think, for in most people's lives. It's some of the most intimate. But with medical information, of course, if you steal that, you're able to gain access to a whole range of other things as well, because it will always come with things like social security numbers. It will always come with personal identifiers, and it will always have a value because of that. So we're starting to see from a cybercrime standpoint lots of different areas of opportunity that are increasing. And let's face it, there is a very low barrier to entry for a cybercriminal.
Is there an insider threat that can come from a privileged insider who might be coerced into giving up the crown jewels? Is that something to be aware of?
Yeah, increasingly, I think people are becoming more and more concerned about this. You know, privileged insiders aren't just people that we would perhaps immediately think of. So it isn't just the CEO. It's not the CFO. It can be the CEO or CFO's assistant. It could be the person who's got admin rights for a set of systems. That's what we mean by privileged. It's a user that has access, quite rightly, to information that is very, very important for the purpose of going about doing their job. And so we are seeing some of those individuals being targeted, certainly from a phishing perspective. I think that there is also concern that at some point, and we talk about this in some of our Threat Horizon work, that at some point those privileged insiders will also be targeted and persuaded in much the same way as the traditional bank manager might have been, whose family was kidnapped and held to ransom, that kind of thing. So there is some concern that we might see some of that coming about as well. My own view is that we'll continue to see much more targeted spear phishing in that particular area with those privileged insiders, because that's the easy piece. And I think that certainly, you know, organizations need to be focusing, training and raising the level of awareness of those. But again, it comes back to, how do we determine what's important to us as a business? How do we identify those assets? How do we make sure that both the technological elements and the people elements are working together in this particular area to protect not just the corporate asset, but also the individual from pressing the wrong button. If you put all of that into the mix, the challenge really for organizations and for individuals is, how do we get smarter at protecting things? How do we become much more aware of the way in which some fairly innocuous, some would say, information, like our pet dachshund's name, might be used? And how do we restrict the way in which perhaps we share that? And how do we increase the level of protection? And that sounds, I think, to a number of people, to be a very miserable way of living. But actually, I think that increasingly we will become more accustomed to it. It will become second nature. And unfortunately, my own view is that that is just the way that it is. If we're going to increase our reliance and dependence on technology, we have to understand that we're using technology to store information that has a value. And if something has a value, people will always want to get access to it, or indeed steal it.
Many organizations still think the way to tackle this is through good old-fashioned awareness training. But I think it's becoming clear that that no longer works. How could it work when we have a new generation workforce, increased remote working, use of smartphones, business/personal on the same device, the introduction of artificial intelligence, all of these complicated matters? So how do organizations go about fixing the problem?
I think in two ways. I think that an organization has to focus on the basics within the enterprise. So it is about making sure that you've got the basic security, that you are regularly updating not just your corporate systems, but that you're also reminding your users to update their personal systems, mobile phones, for instance, and so on. So a real function on the basics. Let's try and get that done. And a lot of breaches that take place come about because the basics are not being done. The second element really is in that people awareness piece. And I increasingly refer to it as education rather than anything else. You cannot force people to do things, certainly not when it comes to cybersecurity and cyber hygiene. So you have to educate them. You have to sell. You have to understand the way in which they work with their technology. And if you just think about those things for a moment, that requires a whole different range of soft skills that perhaps security people don't have. And so the job then isn't fairly and squarely in the realm of security. It's about how security can provide some of the insight to people who are better placed to educate end users. I'm thinking in particular of people in perhaps an HR function, in a training function. I'm thinking of line managers. Everybody has to be on the same page. It's no good if your line manager doesn't password protect his or her laptop, for instance. You have to have the levels of consistency. So it's about being very clear that there is an approach that we have across the enterprise to security, and we do it for a reason. So it's about explaining. It's about education. It's about consistency of messaging. And it's about making sure that everybody across the enterprise is abiding by the same rules. And I think if we can start to do that, then we're starting to make progress in this particular area. But we shouldn't imagine that this is, again, some short-term program that we can fund and then breathe a sigh of relief because we've done it. It doesn't work like that. It's an ongoing thing. And so we do have to have refresher courses. We have to keep pace with technology. That's the other thing, because technology is changing so quickly. So therefore, our education and our awareness processes need to be changing equally as quickly. And those are just some of the challenges, I think, that organizations are having to face.
Interesting. Well, in summary, the sophistication of targeting individuals to get access to an organization's information or our personal data is only set to increase. Organizations need to take a more holistic approach that includes both technology and people when they look at new ways to embed security into the DNA of their business. For more information on how to manage insider threats, visit securityforum.org. Thanks again, Steve.